It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond, along with my good buddy, Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well, Dave. Hope you are.
Absolutely. I'm a father. I'm a teacher, homeschooler. You know, my kids homeschooling. I've got catching up on some TV and some movies and music. Playing my new turntable. So lots going on.
Absolutely. That's what you have to wear many hats as a parent all the time. But during this coronavirus outbreak, many parents have had to go back to stuff they learned several years ago in terms of recalling the way they've done math and different things that you had to do to get through school to be able to teach your children.
No doubt about it. I have about 5 years of teaching, so I do have a little bit. The problem is that you and I were talking about, we'll get all into sports in just a second, but it's really difficult when you have kids that are so used to going to school and the routines and habits of what they were doing and not having their too amazing, the teacher and teacher assistant. So now you have a situation where as much as they love you, I think that they, maybe, I don't know if respect is the right word, but the role of teacher is, you and Stacy, I know, that's Bubba's wife, by the way, we're both teachers, but still it's something about going to the school, having that relationship with the teacher in the classroom and the teacher assistant in the classroom that is missing right now. It's no offense to y'all, are awesome, I'm sure, as teachers, and I did okay when I was teaching, but I think it's something about the change of scenery, maybe.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. That's one of the toughest things, in my opinion, there is to do as far as teach or coach your own child. They need that outside voice. They need to hear it from someone other than their parent. I wholeheartedly agree with that. So definitely tough times. And no matter what age the child, obviously, even for an older child, it's probably a little bit easier for sure, especially if that individual's intrinsically motivated or has that fire and desire to do the best that he or she can and whatever it is they're doing. But unfortunately, a lot of times that's not the case. And when you have unmotivated learners and you subject them to these e-learning days that they're unfortunately, I mean, it's just the way it is. They're unfortunately not going to get a whole lot accomplished, but hopefully each of these young people, especially those who aren't motivated, have someone that can maybe point them in the right direction and show them the light, so to speak.
No doubt about it. Real quick, Bubba, did you hear today with the State Board of Education, what did they decide is regarding the after May 15th, they were supposed to make their decision. I didn't hear anything this morning that came from it. Did you?
I actually have not heard about that yet. No.
Okay.
But
it's supposed to be at 9 o'clock this morning in Raleigh, but we'll check on that and definitely, yep. It is what it is. I assume that they were not going to be back, is my assumption, but I don't know. But what I do know about is there's still sports going on. And by the way, before we forget, we're going to do our roundtable, but we'll do a quick roundtable. But I wanted to mention, too, we've got a great guest, don't we, Bubba?
Yeah, we really do. We caught up with Pete Buscano. Pete was, of course, the director of operations for East Carolina Baseball back from the inception of the Cliff Godwin era and back in the summer of 2014. And so he was there with ECU through June of 2019, before he made the decision, actually prior to the 2019 season, to go into private business as his wife took a job up in Madison, Wisconsin. So it was awesome catching up with Pete. He had some awesome stories about his time in Greenville with the Pirates, and then also what he's doing now as he is following in Ryan Kane's footsteps. And he learned a lot from him and really respected what he did. Ryan Kane, of course, the mental performance coach, sports psychologist in a lot of ways, and had him on the show before. But anyway, excellent chat with Pete. I know our listeners will really enjoy it.
No doubt about it. And thanks to Pete, and just shows you how many great program people to come to Greenville to the different programs as far as the athletic department is concerned, no doubt about it. Bubba, where do you want to start on a roundtable?
Let's start off talking a little Pirate basketball. One of the grad transfers that Joe Dooley and staff have been after is Ryan Murphy. Ryan played this past season for the Pittsburgh Panthers and the ACC, of course. Prior to that, he had been a JUCO in New Mexico and then also played a year at Charlotte. He had left Charlotte. He had done well there, but I think he was just not really crazy about the role that he was going to be playing with the new coaching staff coming in with Ron Sanchez and company. So that's what led to his departure. And so now he's moving on from Pittsburgh, averaged, I want to say, about 8 points a game this year for the Panthers. And he narrowed his list down to four. The Pirates are, of course, one of those four. That's why we're talking about this. And in no particular order, it is East Carolina, BYU, Tulane, and UC Santa Barbara. He is a California native, so that UC Santa Barbara offer is intriguing from the standpoint, does he want to play close to home, or how important is that to him? I haven't seen anything along those lines. So hopefully if he's the one we want, hopefully we get him.
Yeah, I am. That's really cool to see Tulane in East Carolina. So you got two American schools, and then for sure the California school. What was the other one, Bubba?
BYU had an excellent season this year, and yeah. Obviously in football they're an independent, but in basketball they're part of a very competitive, very very good West Coast conference, with the likes of Gonzaga and then also St. Mary's.
No doubt, and it'll be interesting to see what he picks down, but. And breaks it down to, I don't know if he's going to do two and then one, but anyway, we'll see how that plays out. Bubba, I want to mention something quickly, too. This week, the NFL expanded their playoffs to 14 teams for the number of years, as long as I've been living and remembering, it's been 12, six in the AFC, six in the NFC. And essentially what the owners have approved now is they've got seven in the NFC and seven and the AFC, gives you some extra games. And, Bubba, you know it's all about that dollar. It's also a chance now for the NFL to go back and renegotiate the TV contracts. And we're not going to spend a long time on it, but just an interesting thing. Historical times is, like I said, that 12-team format has been there for a number of years. In addition, my understanding is they're going to add an extra game as well to the regular season at some point, if not this year, maybe next year, but that'll be 17 regular season games. And Bubba, that's been 16 for a long, long time. So another historical moment we haven't talked about, but just want to mention that news from the NFL.
Yeah, I haven't had the opportunity to read a whole lot about that. I was aware that those conversations and that those moves were going on. I know that's something, I believe, as far as the 17 game schedule that we discussed
Ron Clement?
Maybe with him, but then Tony Dunn. When we had Tony Dunn recently,
yeah.
We discussed that with him, and I believe he said that was going to probably be implemented for the 2021 season. But, as far as that's concerned, interesting that they're going from 16 to 17. Like you said, a lot of times it's about the money, and I do remember, I don't recall exactly what year, but I do remember prior to 16, I want to say that they were playing 14 games. But
that's correct.
But that was back, I guess, before I really started following it, because like you said, it had been 16 for an awful long time. But as far as, what about the preseason games? What are they going to do with them? Not knock at least one of them away?
They wanted 18. And what the talk was at one time, they were going to trim off a couple preseason games. And no offense, I love the NFL, and you know how much I love college football. But I understand it's great for our players, for the Pirates. But anyway, we'll talk more about that. You want to go to our guest?
Yeah, let's go to that conversation with Pete Buscano, again, former director of operations for East Carolina baseball from 2014 to 2019, and now the owner of Ford Mental Performance. And here's that conversation with Pete.
Well, as we continue our podcast, we obviously don't have ECU baseball going around, but Bubba, we actually have a great guest that is tied back to roots in Greenville.
Absolutely. The director of operations for East Carolina Baseball from 2014 through 2019 was Pete Buscano. And right now he's up in Madison, Wisconsin, a new venture with Ford Mental Performance. And welcome into the show, Pete.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be here.
Very excited to have you on. I guess we're going to get to what you're doing now, but can you talk first off how you came to Greenville, to ECU? We wanted to get your ECU ties in and obviously talk to, I know you're in Madison right now. We'll get to that in a little bit, but how did you come to Greenville and ECU and kind of give us your backstory for Pirate Nation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in Clearwater, Florida, just outside of Tampa, and, you know, growing up, did all the stuff that Florida kids do, go to the beach, play a little baseball, you know, go to Big Cat Rescue and, you know, see old Carol Baskins and Joe Exotic and all those crazy cats and everything that now I realize that everybody else is finally getting to see a little bit of the craziness. I forget that not everybody grew up in Florida and that, you know, things like that aren't exactly the norm.
yeah, that's become what everybody's watching now during this crap is that Tiger King. I've yet to watch it, but it, good Lord,
it's a pretty crazy story, and
it's a train wreck.
it is, and just when you think it can't get any worse, it definitely takes it to another level. It's a good story, but that place that Carol Baskins runs, I used to go there once a year on a school field trip to see the cats and learn about the tigers and the panthers and stuff like that. So it was pretty wild. But no, grew up in Clearwater, attended college at the University of Central Florida, where I was a student manager for the baseball team there. It was there that I actually met Cliff Godwin. So he was actually an assistant coach at the time, the recruiting coordinator at UCF. And, you know, he was the one that actually hired me to be a student manager there. And my first year there was his last year. So the head coach at the time was Terry Rooney, who's now the pitching coach at the University of Houston, small world there. But then the two paid assistants were Cliff and then Jeff Palumbo was the second assistant on that staff. So my first year there was their last year. And, you know, we made a regional for the first time in 7 years there. And then, you know, with success comes opportunity. So Cliff went off to Ole Miss, Jeff went off to VCU, and I stayed there to finish up my undergrad and, you know, took a healthy 5 years. Didn't feel like rushing it at all. But I did know that when I got out, I wanted to get into, you know, college baseball, wanted to get into coaching, things like that. So I had actually called Cliff and Jeff in the fall of or spring of 2013 and talked to them about, you know, my plans, everything like that. And they got me set up coaching at a summer team in the Valley League up in Virginia. So I got to coach for the New Market Rebels for a summer and kind of cut my teeth, figure out what I didn't know as far as coaching went. And, you know, came back from my last year at UCF and, you know, was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I was talking to Cliff about it one day and he offered, you know, hey, well, why don't you come here to Ole Miss and be a graduate manager, we'll put you on scholarship, and, you know, you get to do everything that a coach does, you know, from throwing BP to hitting fungos, everything like that, and kind of learn the ropes, and then you can move on from there. And I said, shoot, sounds like a good deal to me. So I applied, got into grad school at Ole Miss, and, you know, was graduated from UCF, spending that summer, you know, before I showed up on campus at Ole Miss, working camps around the country. And, you know, that was, of course, the year that Ole Miss, you know, made their historic run and got back to Omaha for the first time in whatever it was, like 50, 60 years, something like that. So I'm watching it the whole time, and I'm actually working at a camp in Clemson. So working for Jack Leggett, who was the coach at the time, you know, spending a couple weeks in Clemson, working their camps. And I get a call from Cliff, and he says, you know, hey, it's looking like I'm going to be the next head coach at ECU. And I was kind of thinking that was coming. So I was like, you know, I was like, hey, that's awesome. Congratulations, man. And I was thinking in the back of my head, I was like, great, what am I going to do in Oxford now? I'm going there and I literally won't know anybody, because he was the only, I hadn't even talked to Mike Bianco, the head coach at Ole Miss. So I was like, great, what's going to happen? He goes, well, I wanted to ask you, you know, would you want to be my director of operations? I said, heck yeah, I do. And so I literally told him, I was like, hey, you got to give me enough time to drive back down to Orlando, pack up my apartment, and then I'll drive back up there. Give me 48 hours. And it ended up taking me a day. So I got off the phone with him. That was the morning of, what was it? June 29th, morning of June 29th, drove down, went and told Jack Leggett, hey, I got to leave your camp early, drove down to Orlando, packed my things, and then on July 1st, drove up, so to Greenville, and had been there for the next 5 years, so.
Talk about the time in Greenville, did you have any places you frequented as far as restaurants, or I guess we can start there. We talk about Pirate baseball too.
Absolutely. No, I really, really enjoyed the Greenville community, and it was really cool from the time that I got there to the time that I left, just seeing how much the city had grown. Cause I felt like the whole first year that I was there, they did nothing but tear things down. Like it was tearing things down. And then, a lot of these old buildings that have been built and, well, not super old, but, 70s and 80s when the architecture wasn't too appealing, tore down a lot of those buildings. And then, they sat empty for a year or two, and then things just started building, things just started growing. And, we loved, going to places, a lot of the local places. I mean, going to Cubby's, going to the Rick House, going, everywhere down on Dickinson Avenue that got built up, whether it was, Dap House or, the guys at Smash Waffles, their stuff was awesome. A lot of those places, Ottavola, CPW. So a lot of those local spots, one of my favorites, GK Cafe. Think about all the places I ended up using for catering, and feeding the guys was a lot of the stuff that I ate personally, and that was the benefit to being the director of ops. So, you can't blame anyone if you don't eat well. So, and if you don't, it's, nothing but your own fault. So I made good relationships with a lot of those places in town and, was able to help support them and, feed the Pirates well.
So Pete, in the open, I was talking about how now you're doing, you started Ford Mental Performance in the summer of 2019, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the reason I mentioned that is because when you were coming to East Carolina in July of 2014, obviously the program hadn't been really down, but not up to the standard that East Carolina baseball had been. So we had been just over 500 for two or three seasons. And so Cliff obviously was implementing his culture on the new staff's way of going about things. And just talk about that process. And I know that first season out of the 35-man roster, we only had something like 27 players at our disposal.
Absolutely. And I think of those 27, only 25 of them were actually healthy, because we had Davis Kirkpatrick, who ended up having Tommy John, and then I can't remember, I think somebody else, was hurt with something. I think it was TJ McDonald, I think, ended up having Tommy John as well. So, from that aspect, it was really easy when we were filling out the travel roster, when I was booking plane tickets, everything like that. We only had, we didn't even have a full healthy travel roster to be able to take with us. So, it was nice from that aspect, but I can't imagine, what was going through the players' minds. Cause that first year for me was like trying to, drink out of a fire hose. But learned an absolute ton, from not just the baseball side of things, but from the organizational side of things, and, what it actually means to be a leader and what it actually means to develop a culture, and, getting to see that transition and be a part of it, and, being there to, with a phenomenal group. I mean, that coaching staff, being with, Cliff Godwin, Jeff Palumbo, and Dan Rozelle, those guys were unbelievable to learn from, and it was certainly no shortage of intensity, as you guys have come to see out of Cliff, but it was also fun at the same time, because, it was not just, I wasn't the only one growing. We all were, it was the first time that Cliff had been a head coach. So, being able to go through that with him and being able to, help him and, see him grow as a leader and as a head coach was pretty awesome. But one thing I'll always remember is every single day started and ended with a come to Jesus meeting that was, you know, hey, if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be. But if you're going to be here, you're going to be as tough as nails, and we're going to be the toughest team in the country because you guys aren't good. You guys haven't made a regional in 2 years. And, you know, I always joke about it with Hunter Allen. He's one of my good friends now, was a shortstop on the team at the time, came back as our volunteer assistant the past couple of years. You know, I always joked with him that, you know, that was the worst 40-win team in the history of college baseball. So it was a group of guys that they ended up becoming pretty good. But at the time, you know, we're playing all these other teams, and, you know, we're looking at, you know, there's not many guys on our roster that we would have kept on over some that we wouldn't have traded, you know, for a guy on another roster here and there. But, you know, our mantra at the time was toughness over talent. And, you know, those guys were the toughest team that I have ever been around. You know, and you know, we won a lot of games on that toughness, on that heart, and, you know, on that, you know, what it means to be a Pirate. So,
no doubt about it. As far as you were talking about Cliff, we love, everybody on the podcast loves Cliff. Is there any stories you can tell us about Cliff, or give us an inside scoop of what Cliff's like?
Cliff is probably the most. He is an incredibly emotional guy, and I don't say that negatively. I mean that positively. He has got one of the biggest hearts of anyone that I've ever been around. I don't think there's a head coach in the country that cares more about his staff, that cares more about his players. You know, he talks about, you know, how he isn't married and he doesn't have kids, and, you know, the 35, 36 guys in that locker room next year, the 50 guys that are going to be in that locker room, those are his kids. And, you know, he is an intense, emotional guy, but, you know, it's because he cares, you know, whether it's as a coach, whether it's as a player, whether it's as a staff member. You know, he wants the best for you. He wants the best for the team, and he wants the best for each of those guys. And, you know, he knows that, you know, it's not about him. You know, if it was about him, you know, he'd be, you know, down in Starkville, Mississippi, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, and it's not about him, and he's repeatedly show that, you know, every time that he gets his contract renewed, he puts more into the program, he puts more into his assistant coaches, puts more into the team than he takes for himself. You know, and I think there's definitely something to be said about that. You know, something to be said about the passion and the intensity that he brings. And, you know, he's one of those, he will get on you, he'll yell at you, but he will also be the first one to pick you up. He'll also be, you know, the first one to dust you off. And, you know, it's always short-lived. I always tell everybody, you know, he never really gets mad. He gets intense, and then it's done. So, you know, I can't say enough good things about him. So, and it, you know, we still talk regularly. And, you know, when I came down a couple weeks ago expecting to see the Pirates take on Columbia, and, you know, that of course got banged, and, you know, ended up, you know, hanging out with him. And, you know, it was a silver lining to it all that we got to spend a little bit more time than we would have if the Pirates were playing.
A couple of quick examples of what you're talking about, and as far as Cliff's character and so forth. He was talking on Pirate Radio yesterday, Thursday, March 31st, an excellent interview. Go back and listen to it if you have not heard it. But that's what Cliff was just saying, how he's talking about the dilemma Nick Barber is facing. A guy like that has been such a program guy and excellent attitude and so on. And what he's facing, he was already in grad school, I believe, is pursuing his MBA. And then mm-hmm. So now he's an out-of-state guy, and he's facing that decision of whether to pay $15,000 or not. And he's just saying that if the NCAA rules allowed it, I would give each of you returning seniors $15,000 out of my salary, because that's how much I love you guys. And then he also said something along the same lines as far as if camps are not able to be held this summer, that he will supplement the volunteer assistant's salary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's something that, you know, like I said, it speaks to who he is, his character. And, you know, a large part of why I believe the Pirates have been successful is, you know, it all starts from the top. And when you have an example like that, and you talk to these guys about culture and you talk to these guys about leadership, they see that it's not a, you know, do as I say, not as I do, you know, situation. Like, he's going to walk the walk, like Ruff used to say, don't talk about it, be about it. And, you know, that's a guy that's 100% about it. So, and, you know, it's, speaking of Nick Barber, you know, that's a situation I don't envy for anyone, but, you know, that's one of the things I reached out to those seniors and, you know, was able to talk to them about while I was in town was, you know, hey, this is why sports is so important, because it prepares you to have to make decisions like this. It prepares you to deal with, you know, the failure and the adversity that's going to come at you in life. And, you know, Cliff always tells the guys at the end of the year that, you know, an old Coach LeClaire quote that, hey, if this is the worst thing that's happened to you in your life, then you're going to have lived a pretty good life. And, you know, for Barber, for those guys, if this is the toughest decision they have to make in their life, well, hey, God bless them. So.
During your time in Greenville, Pete, you obviously had the opportunity to be a part of an awful lot of success, both on and off the field. On the field, you joked about the worst 40-win team in the history of college baseball, and then you had the opportunity in that tremendous 2016 run and being part of another regional championship and a couple of conference tournament championships down in Clearwater in your hometown. So just do you have one favorite memory, or do they all kind of rank right up there?
They're all up there. I mean, when you talk about that first dog pile that we had down in Clearwater, I mean, just that validation of all the hard work that we had put in and, you know, everything we had done, having that, being able to culminate in that success, and especially, you know, extra dose of special for me, you know, that field that we play on down there at Spectrum, you know, Spectrum Stadium, you know, where the Phillies have spring training, you know, that's that field's about two blocks away from my house. I mean, I graduated high school on that field, was able to play, you know, some high school baseball games on that field. It's a meaningful place to me. So to be able to do that in front of my parents and have that validation of, you know, all the hard work we put in was awesome. But, you know, the Travis Watkins walk-off home run against UVA in 16, winning the regional in 16, winning game one at Texas Tech in 16. Even though it was heartbreaking, the memory of game two is still one of the better memories I have from, you know, my time in college baseball. But, you know, probably the best and memory that I'm most thankful for is the fact that, you know, the last game that I was a part of at Clark LeClaire Stadium was, you know, being able to beat Campbell and, you know, being able to win that regional and being able to dogpile on that field, you know, that I'll forever have that as my final, you know, memory of Clark LeClaire Stadium. And I don't think anything gets more special than that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And kind of transitioning a little bit, sticking with baseball, but just talking, I know we talked about this off the air when we were setting up the interview, and just talking about how, as a director of baseball operations, you wear so many hats. And we've heard that from not only yourself and other interviews you've done over the years, but other director of ops and Cliff himself, and how much he appreciated the work that you and other directors. And, so just talk about, are there any stories from behind the scenes where maybe as you know, sometimes even though you align things the way they need to, it doesn't always happen that way when you're relying on other people to be places on a certain time or on a certain schedule. So are there some stories that you can share where maybe you were a little worried?
I'll tell you what. So one of my favorites, and I always joke with them about this, but was getting to know and getting to deal with JJ McClam. You know, learning how to work with old JJ. So my first day as director of operations, you know, I showed up that morning and you know, Cliff said, "Hey, grab a pen and paper. We're going to take a walk." And so I said, "Okay, grab my notepad and a pen." And we started walking through the stadium. And you know, as fast as I could write, I about burned a hole through the paper. I was writing so fast. You know, I was writing down everything that, you know, Cliff, you know, the ideas he had, stuff he wanted to work on, you know, everything like that. And you know, in my gung ho mentality of, "Hey, this is my first day on the job. I got to get all this done today." And so he said, you know, I was like, "So who, just as a start, like, who do I contact?" He says, "You know, contact JJ about this, contact JJ about that, contact JJ." I didn't know JJ from Adam, but I had his phone number and I had his email. And I absolutely probably was the bane of his existence for probably the first 3-4 months. And, you know, to the point where, you know, he set rules that, like, I wasn't allowed to talk to different departments and stuff like that, because, you know, I will say one thing that I am good at is I'm a pretty resourceful person. And so if I didn't get the answer from JJ, I was going to figure it out. But right. Apparently that wasn't how he wanted things done. So, you know, me contacting the school's carpenters directly or me contacting the school's electricians directly was not what he wanted. And so I had a carpenter came out and I was showing him, you know, the stuff we had to get some stuff built in the mudroom, you know, new bat rack, stuff like that. And so, you know, we talked through all the plans that I'd drawn up and everything. And so he was going to go get me a quote, and I gave him my card. And, you know, I come in the next morning and, you know, my card is sitting back on my desk, and on the back of it, you know, JJ had written, you know, "I'll handle the mudroom," and signed it. And so as a joke, I kept it and, you know, framed it. And every time he would come by the stadium, I'd always point that out to him. You know, we have a great relationship now, but in that first bit, you know, learning the patience and learning how to work with other people, you know, as a kid fresh out of college, it was a hard learned skill. But no, other than that, there's, you know, there's always the other things that come up. You know, at UCLA last year, having our entire flight return home get canceled in the middle of the second game of the doubleheader after, you know, we had lost two tight first games. So, you know, figuring out how I was going to get the team from Los Angeles to Greenville in, you know, the next 12 hours. So when we were supposed to fly home, so that was a fun time. And, you know, meals here and there, not showing up, stuff like that's always adds a little wrinkle, raises the heart rate a little bit as a director of ops. So the stuff that makes it fun.
Pete, I want to talk about as far as the this week with the eligibility situation, which we're happy about, but also I know there's a lot of people in baseball that said that's great, but how do we handle as far as, I guess, the budget and different things since you've been the director of ops? How do you, I know we're in uncharted territory, we've heard that term a lot, but how do you think that we can navigate our way through the recruiting issues and as far as number of players? I know they've expanded to 50, which I was really happy about, but can you talk from your expertise of what you think will happen?
You know, I think college baseball is in unprecedented territory. I think it's going to be the best that it ever has been from a standpoint of the quality of players, especially if you talk about them, you know, shrinking the draft and everything like that. But, you know, I definitely think it's, you know, it's you're going to get a lot of quality out of the quantity. I don't think for, you know, I don't think the budget is really an issue, from the fact that, you know, ECU baseball was profitable in 18 and 19. And a large majority of that came from the fact that, you know, we were able to host the regional, you know, and when you talk about being able to make up the money next year, you know, it's not like it's going to cost any more to travel, because the travel rosters are not going to be expanded. It's not like they're going to allow 35 players to travel. It's still going to be the 27 man conference travel roster. And then, you know, they had the one road trip that they drove to Charlotte, but they didn't even fly anywhere this past year. So it's not like they've lost money with any of that, because, you know, a lot of those trips are chartered flights. And, you know, I guarantee that none of those were booked or contracted at the point that the season was canceled. So, you know, it's not like they've lost anything, you know, so they've got the money from this year to handle next year. So in my mind, there should be no issues paying seniors. Now, that's for baseball. I don't know about for all the other sports. And, you know, one thing that has been consistent, if, you know, there, it's not often that ECU will do something for one sport and not do it for all of them. So, you know, in that aspect, it definitely creates an issue. But I think the NCAA made a good call allowing institutions to decide whether they were going to fund it or not. You know, and I know for some players, they're coming back no matter what, whether they can be on scholarship or not. And, you know, hey, for incoming guys, it's going to be no different. The one thing I'll say about ECU baseball is it's a fair program, and, you know, coach is going to put the best nine on the field for the game, and that's not always the nine best players. So, you know, having the talent is probably about three quarters of what it takes to play at ECU. You know, it's the guys that are going to do well in the classroom, the guys that are going to be coachable, that are going to do, you know, what the coaches say and buy into that culture that, hey, there you go. And if it doesn't work out right away for you, you know, that's not a reason to leave. You know, you see success stories all the time about guys that, you know, don't have success right away, or that maybe have to wait a little bit. And, you know, you look at guys like Cam Colmore. You look at guys like Sam Lanier, you know, these guys that, you know, Matt Bridges, that, you know, hadn't been good for a little while. Or, you know, Cam, you know, it wasn't until the regional last year that he really showed what he was capable of when he pitched in three of the five games in the regional, you know, and really showed that he could be a guy out of the bullpen and, you know, get an expanded role. So, you know, we always talked about we get what we earn, and that's not going to change, you know, when it comes to next year and possibly having, you know, 40, 45 guys.
Pete, another question I had for you before we move on and talk about what you're up to now up in Madison, Wisconsin. That's what with Coach Godwin, obviously, one of the things that he's notorious for is those responses that he has with the media when maybe not the most wise questions or best questions are asked, and that was highlighted last year at the banquet prior to the season. And so are there any times where you recall maybe a response that he had to something that you said? I know he loves talking about the weather and other topics like that are hypotheticals.
No, I mean we learned pretty quick, you know what was going to fly, and that was, you know, that was one of the things that made our culture so great is, you know, we did have, you know, no complaining rules implemented, and, you know, we talked about what we can control and what we can't control, and that didn't just apply to the players. That was every bit as much as for us, and, you know, it made me a better person. You know, there were some times early on where, you know, something would be, you know, frustrating or something would be annoying, and, you know, hey, you nip it in the bud quick, you get corrected, and you move on from there.
So talk about that decision to go to Madison, Wisconsin. That's something that folks who really follow Pirate baseball were probably well aware of that before it actually happened last summer. But that's something that Coach Godwin knew well in advance and had planned for it. So talk about that decision and then also what you're up to now with Forward Mental Performance.
Yeah, so, you know, it really was a decision that for the most part was out of my hands. You know, my wife, she had done everything, you know, possible to help support me, you know, while I was at ECU, from, you know, moving up from Orlando with me. We started dating back in college. So, you know, moving up to Orlando where she didn't know anybody, and, you know, taking the coach's wife, director of operations wife role. You know, she finally had a job offer that, you know, was a dream job for her up here at the University of Wisconsin. And, you know, it was one of those that, hey, you know, we had done what I wanted to do for 5 years, so it was only fair that, you know, it was my turn to support her. And so, you know, that happened pretty quickly in November of 2018. And so I made sure that, you know, as soon as it sounded like it was something that might be a real possibility of happening, you know, I let Cliff know that it might be coming down the pipeline. And then, you know, within probably a week, you know, it was official, and, you know, we were packing her stuff up that Thanksgiving and moving her up here to Madison. And, you know, it was probably one of the most difficult conversations I've ever had to have, just because it wasn't a conversation that I really ever thought I would have with Cliff. You know, I had no intention of leaving or, you know, pursuing other roles, anything like that. And so being, you know, telling him, and, you know, his first reaction was just hoping that I would stay through December, you know, and get him through the new year. And, you know, I knowing how much goes into, you know, a college baseball season and everything like that, and how much I personally cared about the team and cared about the players and their experience, and, you know, thinking about, you know, Cliff and thinking about, you know, the Bryant Packers and the Jake Agnoses and, you know, all those guys who were in their, you know, either draft years or senior years, you know, thinking about them and thinking about, like, you know, what would happen if I up and left right before the season. I wasn't about to do that to those guys. So Keegan and I agreed that, you know, she would move up here to Madison and I would stay behind and, you know, get things in order. So when I was able to leave, you know, after the season was done and we hired my replacement, that, you know, I was leaving the Pirates in as good a position to be successful moving forward as I could, because, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I handled that, you know, I realized they probably, not everybody knew how I did it or, you know, what I did or everything exactly that I did. So, you know, Cliff and I met regularly throughout the last spring and put together, you know, we called it the Dobo Bible, the Director of Operations, Baseball Operations Bible. And, you know, it kind of highlighted, you know, a year's process for the Director of Ops and, you know, really gave a roadmap, you know, for how we did things at ECU and, you know, what we did when and everything like that, because it was all stuff that, you know, in the previous 5 years, Cliff and I had kind of created together, you know, how we were going to run Mission Week, how we're going to run the Purple and Gold World Series, how, you know, pregame goes for the Pirates and, you know, postgame meals and everything like that. And so being able to put that all in, you know, one neat hard drive to have to pass on to the next guy, you know, I think definitely helped ease the transition quite a bit. And, you know, and then the fact that, hey, I told him I wasn't dead. I was just moving to Wisconsin. So phone still works, email still works. And, hey, if they had any questions, to give me a call. And, you know, I was able to help Blake Hardegree, I think, at least quite a bit, you know, to get his feet under him and, you know, help keep things rolling as they always have. And Blake's done a tremendous job with that. So, you know, all the credit to him and the rest of the staff for, you know, not letting it be able to dip or, you know, have any, you know, you guys saw it from the way the season started. They were doing just fine without me. So
with what you're doing right now with forward mental performance, obviously that was something, I don't know if this is where the seeds were planted, excuse me. But Brian Kane with peak mental performance out on the West Coast. He's someone we've had on the show, does an excellent job, works with a ton of college baseball programs and other clients in the sports world. So just talk about that decision. And I know you said that was something that you had in mind well before you left ECU.
Yeah. So, you know, of all the hats that I wore, probably my favorite one was being able to work with the guys on that stuff, on the mental performance and on the leadership side of things. And, you know, we brought in, you know, Brian Kane, and we brought in, you know, Chris Howe with Granite Frog Consulting and stuff like that to work with the guys on leadership, and Brian to work on the mental performance. And, you know, they would come in once or twice a year, but then for the rest of the time, we wanted to make sure that we really worked on the stuff and the guys got good at it and everything like that. And so, you know, that's kind of where I was able to fill that role while they weren't there. So whether it was putting together a programming for team meetings, you know, an article or something to talk about, you know, something to help build that growth mindset and that mindset of, hey, we're always getting better. You know, that was probably, you know, 15 to 20% of my job, but it was the most fun that I had and the part that I enjoyed the most. So when I was looking at, you know, something to do after, like what I was going to do next, you know, that stood out to me as, hey, well, if I like that, why not try and do this full time? You know, so I got together with Brian and he started his, you know, mental performance mastery certification, which, you know, it was everything that we had been working on with the guys for the last 5 years, just kind of all bundled up into one package. So, you know, went through that course with him and, you know, got that certification. And then, you know, it was moving forward. It was, you know, hey, you know, I don't exactly know what the future holds. I don't exactly know, you know, what's going to happen, but I know if I work hard and I do the right things, that things are going to work out eventually. You know, and so my self motto has kind of always been, hey, just keep moving forward, keep moving forward. And, you know, there's the age old, you know, bicycle wisdom that, you know, if you want to stay balanced, stay upright on a bike, you keep going forward. When you stop, that's when you fall over. So, it kind of paired well with the, you know, the motto for the city of Madison and the, you know, Wisconsin as a whole is, you know, the forward idea, you know, is kind of the same thing. So it was a no brainer, at least for the name. But, you know, from there, I've slowly, you know, put my heart and soul into this, like I have ECU baseball, and, you know, starting to get clients here and there. You know, I'm fortunate to work with a handful of high schools, both in North Carolina and in Wisconsin, and then getting to speak at different conferences and events, leadership events at the University of Wisconsin has been great. And then I actually, you know, about a month and a half ago, took on a new client that is the number one ranked lightweight for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in the world. So getting to work with him on mental performance and stuff like that has been unbelievable. But, you know, it's like anything else, you know, you gotta put your heart into it, gotta work hard at it, and hey, hope good things will happen.
Hey Pete, one of the things I know is that Cliff always says get 1% better every day. That's probably a good philosophy for all of us right now, going through a tough time, a difficult time with the coronavirus, and we don't have a lot of the activities, including right now. A lot of us would be at the EC baseball games, and some of the fans are even traveling to the baseball games, but I guess right now it's taking on yourself and getting 1% better every day, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, whether that's picking up a book, you know, downloading the app, Duolingo, that's one thing I've started doing, trying to learn Spanish. You know, if it's, hey, going outside for a run, or, you know, for some people getting 1% better means, hey, you know, we always talk about wanting more time with family, wanting more, you know, time to connect with relatives and things like that. And, you know, that's been one of the best parts about this for me, is the fact that, you know, I normally work from home the majority of the time, you know, whether I'm on the phone or Skyping or FaceTiming with teams, stuff like that. Well, now my wife's working from home too. So, you know, we've got our first child due in beginning of September. So, you know, the quiet quality time that we're getting to spend just us right now is not lost on me. And, you know, that could be a lot, you know, that, you know, hey, for a lot of people, this is the time that you've always hoped for. So, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Call the family member, you know, read the book, listen to the podcast, try and learn, try and, you know, do something. Don't waste this time. And, you know, whether that, you know, is different for different people, you know, it's up to you to figure out how to fill it. But, you know, it can be constructive. Learn about Joe Exotic and some crazy tigers. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Now, Pete, and just some of the things that are more recognizable that Brian Kane has done. I know it entails an awful lot. It encompasses a lot, everything that he does, but the more recognizable one, or one of those things, is certainly eating fire or breaking a board with your head. And we joked about that off the air, and I know breaking the board with your head is something you did recently. So just tell our listeners what goes into something like that in terms of commitment and belief and so on.
Absolutely. So, you know, when we break boards, and it's not something that I have players do by any means. I know the liability through that's through the roof. So, you know, there's no liability with just doing it myself. But, you know, it's one of those things that you talk about. You know, if you're going to dive into anything, and if, you know, you're going to be successful in anything, you really have to commit to it. And, you know, it's 2 feet in, and, you know, breaking a board is no different. It's not like we're breaking a little eighth of an inch piece of balsa wood. You know, this is good 3/4 inch, you know, plywood, or not plywood, pine wood boards. So it's a solid piece of wood. And, you know, if you're going to break the board, you have to commit to it, and you have to, you know, hey, nothing is going to stop me from breaking this board. And, you know, the people that can do that and go 2 feet in and, you know, hey, give it all they've got, they're going to be the ones that snap the board. The ones that, you know, are tentative or, you know, lukewarm about it or aren't willing to commit, they're the ones that are just going to end up whacking themselves in the face with a piece of wood. And, you know, you're not going to get any better, but it's a good allegory for life. And it's a good allegory for, hey, being aggressive on the field. Like, hey, if you want to win the game, if you want to win at life, you have to go for it. You can't play, you know, to not lose. Like, if you're playing to not lose, you're never going to be loose enough and successful enough to go out there and win. So, you know, you have to want to go win. You have to want to break the board. And, you know, when you put your head to that wood, you're going to find out really quick if you're lying to yourself or if you're actually committed. So it's one of my favorite exercises that I get to do.
Here in recent years, I guess more than just recent years, but the University of Wisconsin's football program is typically one of the strongest in the nation. And I know you've had the opportunity to go to Camp Randall Stadium, see the jump around, and then some other less glamorous things that the Wisconsin students do, which are, I guess, not even understandable. But we'll leave those out. But just talk about the opportunity to what the atmosphere is like at Camp Randall. And I know you said you're making some comparisons to things at Dowdy Ficklin back when the Pirates were winning football games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about from a historical perspective, you know, going into a place like that and, you know, seeing the shrines to Barry Alvarez and, you know, all their Rose Bowl championships and stuff like that. I mean, you feel the history of the stadium. It feels like an old stadium, but at the same time, you get in there and, you know, maybe I had set my expectations too high, or maybe it was, you know, my expectations coming from ECU and what Dowdy Ficklin was, you know, back when Ruff was there and when he had the Pirates going, that, you know, it was a little underwhelming in Camp Randall. I will say that the jump around was cool, but that was probably only, you know, 2 minutes of the whole experience there. It might have been because it was a cold day and everybody was packed in, but it didn't hold a candle to, you know, the guitar riff from, you know, Purple Haze and, you know, the smoke and the Pirates entrance and, you know, just thinking about, you know, how crazy the environment is the whole game. Like, one of my favorite, I talked about, you know, hey, maybe it was a little cold at Camp Randall. You know, that makes me think of, you know, the game, I'm trying to think, it was probably 2016, you know, maybe the fall of 16 when we played Virginia Tech at home and it was raining the whole time and it was absolutely shootout. Yeah, it was cold and raining and it was awesome. And the crowd was in it the whole game. Like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about that game right now. And, you know, I haven't been anywhere that holds a candle to that. So, you know, it's maybe I was a little spoiled being a Pirate for a little while, but, you know.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of folks around the nation, when they hear East Carolina, they just kind of snicker or laugh, but they don't realize until they experience what we have with our fan base, whether it's football, baseball, on a few isolated occasions, not on a consistent basis, but in Minji's can start get to rocking and be a hostile atmosphere as well. Yeah, a lot of folks around the nation, they had no idea what East Carolina has to offer. And then a lot of times, I think, I don't know if folks around here just don't want to admit it, I think some outside of North Carolina or outside of the region will at least admit to being more in tune and more connected with what East Carolina has been as a program than some of the locals that want to deny it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think we're the exposure is getting there, you know, and especially, you know, I think about from a baseball standpoint, you know, I think people have seen the last 2 years, you know, with the regional coverage, you know, what Clark LeClair can be, you know, and the support that you guys give and, you know, how special of a place it is. I mean, Baseball America wrote that article on the jungle last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago. And I think they tweeted that thing out just because I was running the ECU baseball Twitter account. And, you know, every time that they put the article out and tagged us in it, you know, I saw all the replies and everything to it. And, you know, a normal article, they maybe put out a handful of times, you know, the more times you tweet about it, you know, the more exposure it gets. Well, that jungle article, they put out probably 25 to 30 times because it just kept getting viewers, kept getting people on their site reading it. And, you know, it's a small, you know, example of how special that is, you know, that they were going to put that out that many times, you know, and it's not really any credit to what we've done, but more, you know, we as in the team, but what the fans are capable of and what the fans do, because out there, that's dictated by y'all. That's not anything we have control over.
Absolutely. That was an excellent article. I remember reading it by Michael Lanana, who was writing for Baseball America at the time. And I guess you're also kind of seeing the impact of the Pirate Nation right now as far as Sup Dogs on down in Uptown Greenville. Sup Dogs is going for their second straight national championship as far as Barstool Best Bar. And it was funny to see Scott Van Pelt of ESPN say that, hey, I'm rooting for my school. I want the Terrapins to find a way to win it, but we're going up against the machine here.
Absolutely. That's a restaurant I didn't include earlier, but that was actually that was the last place that I ate at before I left Greenville. So, you know, Cliff asked where I wanted to go to lunch before I left, and hey, it was going to Sup Dogs for a couple chili dogs. So, you know, that is a special place, and you gotta think that you know, after we win it this year, I imagine Barstool might retire the old Greenville and Sup Dogs from the best bar bracket, so everybody else continues to play.
I'll take it Dave had to return to his day job, but Pete, it's been great having you on the show for the first time. We appreciate you being so generous with your time. We'd love to have you back on sometime down the road.
Absolutely. Always happy to talk Pirate baseball, talk sports. So glad you guys are doing well, and I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you very much, Pete. And I know, Bubba, we failed to mention, let's obviously plug his website and obviously social media too.
Absolutely. Like you heard in that interview, Pete has done work with high schools, not only in Wisconsin, but other states as well. So just because he's located in Madison, Wisconsin, certainly does not mean he cannot assist your team, whether it's a high school team, middle school team, what have you, here in North Carolina. So definitely reach out to him. Check out his website. It's FordMP.com. Again, FordMP. As in middleperformance.com, and you can reach him. His email is pete@fordmp.com, or you can simply go to fordmp.com, and there's a contact form on the website. So you can get in contact with Pete Buscano, and either of those ways, I encourage you to reach out to him if that sports psychology or motivational aspect of the game is something that you're able to invest into.
No doubt about it. And, you know, you always hear that old cliche, it's 90% sports or 90% mental, 10% skill. I really believe that, and that would hold true for Pete. Thank you, Pete. And by the way, Bubba, great show last night we had on Facebook Live with Dr. John Breen, the latest on coronavirus. We're going to get that out sometime today, early tomorrow. And then we'll already have that out, I guess. But I want to talk about Saturday night. Very excited about the big trivia night for us.
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun on our Facebook page. All you have to do is go to facebook.com/thesportsobjective. And so when you go to our page, or you can simply just go to Facebook and search for the Sports Objective page. And 7 o'clock on Saturday night, myself, you, Kyle will be on there hosting Pirate and Sports Trivia. We'll have questions pertaining to East Carolina football, basketball, baseball, maybe some of the Olympic sports. Also, there'll be other college and professional sports trivia, whether it's about the Carolina Panthers, Atlanta Braves, what have you. But it's going to be an awful lot of fun. It will probably last right around an hour, give or take. But we certainly anticipate it being at least probably 40 to 50 questions, maybe more. We'll see how it goes, but we'll have plenty of questions prepared. It's going to be a lot of fun, and Domino's pizza and gift cards will be at stake. Obviously, a lot of folks are staying at home now, as ordered by the governor, unless they have those essential jobs or going to the grocery store. So if you want to stay in, maybe you're running short on groceries, then this would come in handy, having a Domino's pizza gift card to be able to use.
It'll be great. lot of fun. And Bubba, I know people can just look for it. It'll be at 7 o'clock on Saturday night. So it'll be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. So make sure that you join us for Saturday night. I appreciate you very much. Bubba, I know you got to run, and Kyle's on assignment. So I appreciate him as always. Thanks to Pete, our great guest. Until next time, you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.